TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to McBride and Brennan for another week. I'm very, very excited. My name is David McBride. I'm a former military officer and whistleblower. And together, I'm with Dr. Robert Brennan. We've got a great show today. We have none other than Mr. John Shipton, who is a very erudite, charming man. I've become friends with him. He is obviously the father of Julian Assange, but now he's becoming a well-known person in his own right, starring in a fantastic documentary called Ithaca. And as I've said in a lot of our guests, one of the side effects of being a whistleblower and facing trial is how many good people that you meet, how many incredible people, like people that run this station, the people that listen to this station. And John is at the very top of my list of people that I'm very, very grateful to have met. It's a bit like being in the French Resistance during the Second World War. I imagine after the war, even though they achieved their objective, it must have been a bit of a letdown. There's something about working with and getting to know quite amazing people, which is an end in itself. So, John, how are you today?
And David, it's such a classy welcome, for an ordinary old builder who's wandering the world just beating the drum for Julian. Thank you very much. And could I return the compliment? I have in my mind that song, Brothers in Arms, all the time, and that fraternity, as you and I are on the hustings, that fraternity grows deeper and stronger all the time.
Yeah, it's my daughter and I, we like to watch Netflix together or good shows together, and one of our favorites was a show called Money Heist, and it really takes off. First you kind of don't get into the bank robbers particularly, but when they start singing these sort of Italian partisan folk songs, which the gist of which is like singing as we go to our deaths, it really gets you going. And I feel a bit like that. I feel like we're the sort of partisans singing merrily, even though we both have some fairly heavy burdens, but you carry them with great grace. And what I love about you is your depth of intellectual knowledge. And I often have to think about things that you've said later on. I also love the father-son story. I've got a father-son story myself. My father was a whistleblower. And I love the fact that whatever happens, the bond between you and Julian, it must be incredibly strong now. He knows that you're out there, as you said, traveling the world, visiting governments, and cap in hand, and just without ever raising your voice, and doing it all on his behalf. And that's again, whatever happens in the long run, that is a really beautiful story, I think. And any parent would really warm to that. So I love that about you. So tell us what you've been doing the last couple of months, and we'll start there, and then we might go back.
Okay. Well, yesterday was in Nimbin, and today, the day before, we were meeting in Mooloolaba. Very strong here, actually. Pilger, the bedroom that I slept in last night, Dr. Liz Elliott's place, the bedroom was graced with a portrait of John Pilger. So John had spoken here, and 8,000 people had turned up to listen to him. So I sent John a note saying that, you know, there's an oil painting here of you at 40 looking good. To again, he's another of the fraternity.
I love Pilger, and yeah, I have this story because I'd forgotten that he also, when we met, and he wanted to meet me, and I felt very honoured, and then realised that he had actually supported my father, and he'd written about the thalidomide story. He looks pretty good now. He must have been very young then. And he's another one of these people who's definitely on the right side of history. And we had a bit of a laugh because when I was in the British Army, he was sort of notorious, and I was involved with the SAS, and they'd said I'd met these guys from the SAS who are very charming. And I said one of the sort of conversations we had 30 years ago in a farmhouse in the west of England, they were talking about running into John Pilger in Cambodia and what a thorn in their side he was. And it was funny to be sitting with him in Sydney Harbour 30 years later and talking about the fact that he helped my father and talking about that incident in Cambodia, which at the time just seemed beyond belief. But he's a pretty great Australian, isn't he? He's got some fantastic stories to tell, as you probably do.
He's wonderful. And as fate would have it, my host this morning for breakfast was a thalidomide victim who stands in great appreciation of your dad, Dr. McBride.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a beautiful full circle when that sort of stuff happens. And I know we occasionally meet by accident. We were walking around the streets of Coogee once, and someone who'd known Dad back in the day and said, "Look, you told me, Dr. McBride, to take the thalidomide off the shelves in Crown Street Hospital. I was a young nurse, and I did what you said." And he started crying because, after all the sort of hardship that he'd had, he wasn't really sure that it actually happened. And it was we just met this person by accident. So yeah, it is nice. And occasionally I meet people who have or online often whose parents took thalidomide or mothers took thalidomide, and it's lovely to have that link. And you are one of those good people from that generation. So is Pilger. You're a bit younger than my father. And yeah, it's funny, but luckily we have a lot of support in Australia. We don't have the government support, but we have a lot of support, and I'm sure up in that Northern Rivers area, you've probably had pretty good receptions wherever you go.
Oh, terrific here. In one of the electorates, we've got about 15,000 active supporters, and I think that's Richmond, the electorate name, and the next electorate down into New South Wales, 11,000 active supporters. That's a fair indication of the vibrancy and spread and rising tide of Australians. I measure it as a hunger for justice and a revulsion at obvious injustice. Also, this brings me to a problem which both you and I deal with in different ways, but we confront in the same way, and that's institutional impunity and personal indemnity of these institutions that have, in one way or another, made themselves antagonistic to fair administration, and in so doing committed crimes, and that impunity and that indemnity, personal indemnity. I have this image in my mind of people going to the Foreign Colonial Office to work and writing out another memo or warrant for a particular bureaucratic action against Julian Assange, and then going home and watching TV and having a glass of wine. The inability to distinguish between what the institutions require in their momentum to protect their footstep, if you like. People say protect their ass. That institutional momentum brings about in the public apathy, because we can't cope very well with an understanding that the institutions of state are working against us. In the case of yourself, it's a constant history over 20 years of deceit. The Iraq war files, or Iraq war logs, point out to us that the targeting procedures, and even to the extent that General McChrystal, after his sojourn, if you like to call it sojourn, in Iraq, makes a statement, well, we killed a lot of people. I mean, the targeting procedures, for example, you would see and posed as an accident that they blow up a wedding party or a funeral cortege. These are actual targeting procedures which target the most vulnerable high points of an existence of a community in order to pacify it, in order to reduce that community to less than human, to a robot-like obedience. And this is you confronted, and I guess you tell us a little bit more about that in detail.
Yeah, no, it's right. And I think that's one of the problems that I've had. The problem is big. And I mean, it's probably like Vietnam. Pilger can give us some examples in that regard, in that people do come around in the end. But it's not, and one of the frustrations both you and I have, it's not conspiracy theory. It's in the public domain. We know, for example, Daniel Hale, who was involved, who worked, who was a pilot in the drone program, he said 90% of the time we kill people, we kill civilians, and we do it deliberately. And that's on record. And he went to jail, and he went to jail with his head held up high. Now, you'd think that there'd be some action, but you still get people who just refuse to see that. I met someone, an old friend from the British Army this week, and we had a lovely lunch, and we talked about my case, and he was very supportive. But I was very downheartened when he said at the end, he said, well, you know, what you've done is different to Assange or something. And it was just annoyed me, because it was obviously some sort of implication that he thought what Julian had done was A, really any different to what I'd done, and B, that he couldn't get out of his head that that there was something wrong with releasing the fact that we were killing civilians and lying about it, et cetera, and all the other things. McChrystal, I think one of the things that sums up McChrystal was there was a guy called Pat Tillman, who was this sort of archetypal college boy, sort of college footballer, and I might have even been professional footballer, who joined the military after 9/11, tried to do his bit. He was shot by his own forces. And McChrystal presided over a cover-up where they tried to say he was killed in action. They didn't want to have to admit that the Americans killed this guy. And that's the sort of people that they are. They will lie about everything. And you're right. And I think that is extremely disturbing, to think that they shoot up weddings in order to break the spirit of the enemy and lie about it and say, oh, no, we thought it was Taliban, but they knew it was a wedding. That is disturbing, and that's not even made up. That's been proven. And I think every right-thinking Australian needs to sort of say, that's not really us. That's not who we are as a nation. And we need to think about where we're going. We're going to go to an ad break.
We do.
Now,
we have to, gentlemen, go to an ad break. I was just about to jump in.
Robert's the organized one. I just rabbit on. Let's have an ad break. See you in 2 minutes.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
So let's discuss the border, because this has just been bothering me every single day. And there are a lot of good friends in law enforcement working on the border to ensure safety for kids. But I have to tell you, we are not getting any answers. There's nothing. There's no transparency. We have groups of kids being picked up, carted off, 25, 50 at a time. That is not an exaggeration. Who are these sponsors taking the kids? There is zero oversight. We have a government facilitating human slavery, this trafficking. And it's not being done in the shadows, but right in front of our faces. It is child slavery business, and it's big business. And why isn't the government transparent? We deserve answers, and we're going to be seeking answers, because let me remind you, they work for us. This administration works for us. And all children need protection. And the people that say to me, you know, it doesn't concern me. I don't have children. I don't have grandchildren. These kids will eventually, it does affect each and every one of us. They will end up in our towns. They will end up in our children in their schools. I have many teachers here in New York City. These children are in the classrooms. They're just sitting there. They do not speak English, and they don't have enough interpreters. So our kids are witnessing this. These poor children are sitting there. It is a mess for all kids. And this is part of the reason we have this complicit government with this youth mental health crisis.
Lynn's Warriors with Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The media isn't silent on child sex trafficking because of the children. It's because of who the customers are. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. And I think I better give the good doctor a little bit of a microphone. We've been rabbiting on. Have you got any questions?
No, I was entranced. No, I mean, just a comment. I mean, once again, I mean, we've spoken about this before. Is that TNT is often derided as like this far right radio station, and my own medical dissident group as being far right, quote. And you were in the military, and yet here we are, fellow travellers, deeply moved with and walking alongside the likes of John Pilger and John Shipton and sincerely doing so. I mean, this kind of like left-right thing, it's just a propagandistic weapon of division when, you know, it's a distraction from the real issues. To go back to the beginning, it's actually very touching, very poignant story. John, you were separated from Julian's mother before Julian was born, and yet you came into his life as a young man. And it's tragic, it's bitter, but it's an incredible bonding experience that it's almost bringing me to tears. The idea that, you know, you're defending your son here, you're trying to save your son, but I don't want to sound like, you know, a genetic determinist, but you were an anti-war activist way back. You have certain sort of sensibilities in terms of your being a dissenter, and so does Julian. To what extent do your political views align, and what's your relationship with him like?
Well, it's sort of like, I mean, well, to be frank, you know, love... you know, only thing that can transcend pain and guilt. And the example is, of course, the mother kissing better when the child falls and scraps its knee or its elbow. Or, of course, in the case of thalidomide children, where the devotion of a parent allows the child to grow up into and have sufficient character to deal with the circumstance of having no arms. So that is one element. The other element is that it seemed nowhere else to go. I don't want to use Margaret Thatcher's phrase, but there just simply was no other direction to go in once Julian in 2019, June, said, will you come back and give a hand? And he wasn't. He was in very poor order at that stage, suffering from being isolated in the hospital, in the hospital section. The hospital section is a pod within the prison, and it has four beds in each pod, and he was in that section isolated. And that isolation in itself deepened the depression that Julian was suffering from. Anyway, so I said yes, and we it seems no reason not to do it. If you follow, you just embark upon a course, you don't follow a narrative, and each circumstance you attend to the best of your ability. I think, I imagine doctors and soldiers, in my imagination, deal in the same way with the circumstances that come before them. This is such and such a disease or syndrome or so on. So you deal with that and move on to the next one, or a soldier embarks upon a program where he has to confront the enemy and take into his rooms of their calculations the problem, the dead, you know, this may. And also in soldiery, there of course is the tremendous bond that exists between soldiers, and it's growing to exist between us who fight this fight against these institutions that have become corrupt. Another thing I'd like to make a brief comment on, which may spin out to something or other, is those executives of state, whether they be politicians or soldiers or leaders of institutions of state, that got up and said, Julian Assange endangered lives. Those men and women have exercised power, which resulted in the destruction of 7.5 countries, the murder of millions of people, and the creation, according to Brown University, a minimum of 36 million refugees. And they have the temerity. They have no grasp of the grotesque, is when they come out and say McBride is a little bit this way or that way, or Assange may have caused endangered lives. It's just grotesque. It's staggering in its unwillingness to speak truthfully to the public, and a willingness to say actually things that progressively said over years by one institution after the other, as they reflect upon each other, these institutions of government, being as how they are, all stacked up in DC, all stacked up together in Canberra, and the virus of ideology spreads between each of them. So that circumstance is what David and I and yourself, that I've read a little bit about you. In fact, I was a founding member, in a sense, of Doctors for COVID Ethics. So I've followed the matter in its entire bizarre and strange fulfillment of a sort of a death wish that how would you describe it? The breaking and the reassembling of, in a strangest fashion, the medical fraternity in one way or another. And how, in the case of thalidomide, is paralleled, because doctors were prescribing this stinking stuff, parallel in the case of COVID, where protocols like ivermectin were actually made irregular in Australia for the treatment of COVID. It's something that is going to take a lot of sorting out by David and yourself and my small contribution.
Yes, well said. And you touched upon, like, it's often looking through the eyes of those who sort of put Julian where he is. They often run this line, oh, well, his WikiLeaks resulted in the deaths of, let's say, foreign agents abroad or the likes, even though often those were just claims made without substantiation. And yet, even if there was any currency to that at all, this is up against literally millions of lives that were lost at the hands of, you know, let's say, American imperialist adventures and other regimes besides. And so it's just a monumental act of hypocrisy. It's amazing. And so,
hypocrisy sort of like is the least of sins. That's the outside of hell. I mean, the outer ring of hell telling whoppers. But I don't count it as hypocrisy. It's a deliberate effort to destroy the character of a person who has brought unwelcome truth to bear in the public. It's not hypocrisy. It's an effort at assassination of the spiritual quality of a human being. There is an all-of-government investigation ordered by the Julia Gillard government into Julian Assange, which found that he had committed no crimes. There's the testimony of Robert Gates at the Chelsea Manning trial, which said that there had been nobody was endangered by the revelations that Chelsea made. Singularly, a statement by Robert Gates to the Congress. It may be embarrassing, it is awkward, but we have suffered no ongoing damage from these revelations. Just that's awkward and embarrassing. So that's how I count these things, not as hypocrisy. You know, hypocrisy, you know, is a slippery thing. You know, you can actually get into it being uttering a hypocrisy simply by accident because the passing time produces a truth. But the practical efforts to destroy the spiritual aura of somebody like David, who's uttering a truth, or I seem to remember David did a wonderful 2-minute video, a very clever thing to do, just little ones, where David pointed out that as the information on events in Iraq flows at different levels, so for example, the drone information flows at one level, the information from cooperating Afghanis flows in a different level. The reports from the captain flow at a different level. The reports from the NCO flow at a different level. And the gossip and chatter amongst the soldiers again is correlated. It all coalesces at the general staff level. So they cannot not know. So if they publicly blame the NCO levels and remove, as they've threatened to do, the medals from members of the SAS, then that's an act that destroys the quality and makes impossible the reform of protocols that those men work under. Just, it's so short-sighted.
Yeah. And well, returning to hypocrisy and the motivation to get him out. Oh, forgive me, David. I'll share John in a second. But you know, the Australian government. Okay, they're motivated to release, and they work hard to release the release of the journalist Sean Turnell from Myanmar, Burma, and they'll, you know, no ending criticism of other regimes and the like. But we had the Morrison government. Morrison basically said it's none of our business. And Albanese says, well, we have to be diplomatic, but I've asked them nicely. You probably need to be more diplomatic than we, but it seems clear to me that that whether it's Australia, the UK or United States in particular, none of the leadership on either side really cares. And it's terrible. It's atrocious.
I think, you know, that the institutional momentum in the persecution of Julian Assange started in 2010 with an email to the Swedish prosecuting authority, which was subsequently quickly deleted. And it continues on to this day. And fundamental is the protocols of the war crimes tribunal after the Second World War. Fundamental is that if you commit a crime, you can't say, he told me to do it. That's, I'm paraphrasing the clause. You can't say he told me to do it. So all elements of the persecution of Julian Assange in the United Kingdom fall upon those institutions in the United Kingdom which are cleverly hid behind the idea of proxy. Okay, that's one. The next one is that acquiescence over time becomes complicity, and this falls upon the Australian government, and in particular the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, an institution which I think should be moved to Darwin and moved to Perth, where they can fulfil their duties more appropriately, closer to the trade lines of the world. But that's so acquiescence over these 13 years is a complicity. Going to your mention of Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, he has done more than any other Prime Minister or Executive of State over the last 13 years. He's reversed the policy. They're actively involved, complicit by acquiescence, and now they are no longer are, and their actions are moving towards resolving the situation, as we are aware that in politics, words are actions. So to bring closure, I assume when Prime Minister Albanese says, we want to bring closure, it's not the sort of closure that would see Julian serving 175 years jail in the United States. That would be beyond grotesque and a failure of duty that would taint his prime ministership and his life. So I assume in the positive that closure means the act to bring Julian home, and also that we will ensure support to the Prime Minister that is the result of closure, that our actions will support the Prime Minister, in the words of Roosevelt when presented with the New Deal. I like this policy, now make me do it. Well, that's my our attitude to what you mentioned about Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's statement. to Parliament in answer to Dr. Monique Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to go to an ad break, and I'm going to have some questions when we come back. Thanks very much.
Hollywood goes bonkers on climate yet again.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Disney star actress Bette Midler goes on climate rant. Quote, I have done my part. I bathe once a month. F you, unquote. So we're saved. Bette Midler bathes once a month. The planet is healing. Hollywood actor Ed Norton hits out at non-sustainable luxury tourism, urges certified standards of sustainability in tourism. Or put another way, restrict more people from traveling by making it more expensive. Actor Norton also lamented the number of people who get on planes. He may as well have just said, only important wealthy people should be allowed to fly. But kudos to comedian Bill Maher, who declared that teenagers worried about climate should shut the bleep up. You're using cars as much as we did, Maher said. Maher also praised private jets. Quote, the only people who don't like private are the ones who can't. Now that's my favorite kind of Hollywood liberal. Honest, frank, and willing to say it like it is. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
How often should you wash your hands?
Maybe around 9 times a day.
4? Like 20?
Maybe twice a day, whenever they feel dirty.
When should you wash your hands?
After you touch some raw meat.
And before starting to eat.
At the beginning, I wash my hands before preparing food.
How would you rate your knowledge of food safety?
Probably like an 8 out of 10.
6 or 7.
7.5. Like, I know the basics, but I'm not necessarily like an expert in it by any means.
Food safety, it's in your hands.
This is McBride and Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. We have John Shipton as our very special guest. Now, John, you touched on something very interesting about progress, slow progress, and I guess I can help be the devil's advocate here. I can see both sides of it. We are a member of something called Five Eyes, which is not well understood, which is a group of nations run, well, the Americans are obviously the most powerful, but we share intelligence, but it means effectively we are a corporation as far as intelligence and national security goes, because you can't have one without the other. You gather intelligence for one reason only, that's to see what your enemies are doing. And so you can better defend yourself against them or fight them if you need to. So it is a war machine, and we are part of the one war machine. So the idea that Anthony Albanese is totally free to shout at the Americans and say you need to release Julian Assange, even though he's technically released information, Five Eyes information. It's not that easy for him to do that. He'd have to really break out of Five Eyes to do that, and that would cause a seismic shift in our relations, and maybe he has to do it relatively gently. Of course, I can see a slightly different side, and because they have also, at about the same time, they have passed whistleblower type legislation. We've passed statutes to create a national corruption body in Australia, which sounded very good. And this is one of the, I guess the Albanese government is one of the great mysteries. We don't know yet. It's a bit like a thriller movie when you marry someone. And I think Alfred Hitchcock did a few, Robert might know, you might even know, is it Suspicion or something, where the Joan Fontaine is married to Cary Grant or something, and doesn't know whether he's a serial killer or not. And it's a bit like that with Albanese, in that they have passed the whistleblower, or they have passed the Corruption Commission. They have talked about whistleblower protection. On the other hand, they are trying to put me in jail for 100 years. Now, we don't really know which is the true Anthony Albanese. Yes, he has said he's going to do something about your Julian Assange's case, but we haven't seen anything yet. and how much longer can we wait? And also, since it's a case of all Julian did was reveal the truth about the Americans and about, in fact, the Australians and about so many other quite crooked goings on around the world, you can see why people like me have a certain amount of frustration to say, well, what's the holdup? He hasn't actually done anything wrong. And you would have thought the Americans need to start looking into the war crimes that he uncovered and the various different double dealings between the states that he uncovered and the various different financial crimes which he uncovered and the various different lies that the diplomats that he uncovered. And before you get to Julian for being a leaker, you might want to look at the substantive problems that he revealed. So I have a certain amount of frustration with an Albanese government. Yeah, sure, we have to live in the real world, I guess, real politics, but I can't wait to see a prime minister, I don't know if it's going to be in my lifetime, who can stand up and say Australian values are you don't commit crime. If you do commit crime, you're responsible. There's no exception for governments who commit crime. We stand alone. We will not bow down simply because you're strong. We're not going to be reduced living on our knees because we think you're going to protect us. Either you obey the law or we are not going to be, your backup sheriff. We stand alone. And if we have to die alone, we will do that because our values mean more than our protection. I mean, that's what most Australians would say when most Australians know about my case and they think, oh, I'm the only one from the whole global war on terror and the 30 million refugees that you talked about and the million people dead and probably a lot more than that. I'm the only one pretty much in the Western world is going to go to jail over it. And that is a disgrace. And people get that. The idea that no one at the top, as you said, I mean, clearly the people at the top saw the footage. They saw the, there was drone footage recording everything. They knew what was going on. And ironically, the people in the middle, the lieutenant colonels, didn't necessarily know what was going on. But the people at the top did. Now I'm going to jail. Julian's already in jail. Anthony Albanese says he can't do anything about it. I'm not so sure. I'm not so, I guess I'm, we'll see. Maybe he'll surprise me. Maybe he'll surprise me. And maybe there's more going on that I don't know about, although I did have a high security clearance, so I don't know if that's right. I guess the jury's still out. I mean, we have to have some sort of faith. But, I mean, at what point do we say, really, you know, you're talking, you're doing things behind the lines. How hard can it be for the Americans to come out with some sort of statement saying what their position is? I don't think silence is good enough. I mean, for example, we have just agreed to last week to let them put unlimited amount of troops and B-52s in Australia. They can bring as many American soldiers into Australia as they want. You'd think that the tit for tat might be that they would at least tell us what they're going to do with Julian. I don't know. What do you think?
The big, fascinating questions in what you deliver your mind to. The first one is that India, Indonesia, China, Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, they would like to see a strong, independent Australia. So they are tools that a powerful diplomatic institution in Australia could use to defend our circumstances in the geopolitical world. That's what they would prefer. They don't want us to be another offshore giant landing deck for American bombers. So that's one. The second one is that the with the changing circumstances in the geopolitical world, Australia's nervous anxiety about being anyway, general nervous anxiety that permeates the political classes and the elites in Australia. We have to be defended. This is now, you know, 150 years old. So it is a cultural phenomenon. And so we attach ourselves in one way or another. We, unlike the United States, we never a revolution to have some sort of faux independence. We have our independence and we're immediately bonded to the British Empire. After 44, 45, bonded to the United States Empire. And I'm serious in use of that word, bonded. For we bonded financially. Our soldiers are trained in America. Our weapons come from America, from the United States. The Washington Consensus is our means of seeing ourselves in the world and altering our economic mix to fit with that, so we don't manufacture anything and we export commodities, which of course means that you can never, ever get to defend yourself because you've got no vertically integrated industry which can be provide tanks and guns and repair under contemporary circumstances, which are infinitely complex. In particular, for example, a submarine, a nuclear submarine, is probably more complex. It's probably the most complex industrial product ever made by humans, more so than a moonshot. So that we simply can't do that. We're trying to get hold of them, I imagine. That I sort of know that there is a movement in Australia to rebuild our industry under WTO rules. You can't subsidise your industry, but you can if it's for defence. So that is the origin, the idea of building a complex item in Australia with France that uses civil grade. Uranium, civil grade uranium. All American submarines use atomic bomb grade uranium. So that was the original and sort of quite a clever idea because it's the complexity. I seem to remember in France there were 350 Australian engineers studying and learning how to build this stuff. Now, that would mean that the grail of independence would be fall into our hands, that holy grail of being able to stand more or less alone in the world and use your industry to be able to defend yourself and your diplomatic skill to get balance in the world, in your environment. That would mean that that would be possible. Well, of course, the United States doesn't want any of that. After Deputy Prime Minister, who loves that title, by the way, the Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Defence in Washington, said that we want Aussies to have these submarines. A member of Congress said, oh, that's not possible. What can happen? We have a building program, which for ourselves, it can't expand to include you, but what we can do here is put 49% of your submariners in the submarine to 51% of ours as a generalisation that they would still be in charge, sacrifice Aussie submarines if any difficulty arose. Now that's the circumstances. They worked, the United States worked and used its levers of power to prohibit us rebuilding our industry and Australian anxiety about maintaining our society as it is, allowed that circumstance to go ahead. And I can't see any of the institutions of state rebuilding or acting to rebuild some sort of independence based upon a vertically integrated industrial society.
Yes, it's very worrying.
And the second
the way of the future.
The second thing, delivering myself to your point that Anthony is entangled in Five Eyes. The Five Eyes, of course, is dynamic, and Five Eyes would have regular reports of the circumstance of 88% of Australians want Julian Assange brought home. So they understand that there's a political phenomena worldwide which they more or less attempt to ignore, except General Michael Hayden, ex-head of CIA, is speaking at the Washington Press Club on the Assange spy or journalist. So I feel that that's a bit of fight back. I don't know yet what Hayden said, but that's the only sign I see of fight back. They leave me alone. They more or less leave you alone to go about, you know, and there's lots of things they can do to us. You know, like poor Scott Ritter, they plant evidence of untoward sexual advances on his computer, or they suck him into them in a conversation. So there's lots that they can do, but they leave us alone. So we must be fulfilling some part of the institutions of state's desires, or some part of those states, of those institutions, because it's all institutional. And the last comment is that governing is really hard work, really difficult work. So if, taking Julian's example or your example, you have to set up committees, you have to staff those committees, you have to get people to report on those committees, you have to ascertain whether the committee is working harmoniously and is actually going about its work and accumulating the required heft to put into action the policy that it's charged with instituting. Really difficult. And you have to have a report every day. One of Thatcher's advisors who brought the morning report each morning to Thatcher is a friend, and he reports that Thatcher was exacting to see that the committees were set up, to see the detail that was flowing through, and asked for reports to be sent to the parliamentary secretary or the cabinet secretary on each item as the report. So he briefed her into two items of policy that she was carrying out each morning. He found Ray McGovern for ex-CIA agent, veteran CIA agents for peace. He gives the same report, except he qualifies it to say that each morning he briefed.
Gentlemen, we'll have to go have a part two, or we're going to crash into the ads. Let's please have a part two. This has
Thank
been
McBride so
and
Sean
Brennan with
on.
Our very, very special guest, John Shipton.